Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
So two other important elections are worth talking about on this Monday. Polling began in Afghanistan over the weekend, and the vastly complex election begins today in India, the world's largest democracy. We'll speak about the stakes in India in just a moment, but in Afghanistan, you might say it is democracy itself that is on the ballot. Final results will take perhaps as long as a week to tally. It appears that voter turnout was high for Afghanistan, even amidst charges of fraud and some violence. The country's election commission estimates that about 7 million votes were cast. Can Afghanistan bring more voices into the political process this time around to fight the sense that it is warlords and corruption that rules in this nation that has seen war for more than a generation? Joining us now is Sarah Chayes, former special advisor to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and now senior associate in the Democracy and Rule of Law program at the Carnegie Endowment. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you.
So it's great to talk to you again. Last time we spoke, you had just finished really a decade of work inside Afghanistan. What is the picture that's emerging in this election as you're seeing it so far?
What's interesting is it's almost as though two separate processes are unfolding simultaneously. One is the genuine enthusiasm of voters, including women voters. I was just on the phone to Kandahar before we began speaking, and friends of mine there saying that, you know, in numbers they have never seen before. The expression they used was people want to defend their vote, that there's a real enthusiasm not just to vote but to ensure that people's votes will count. And that means a lot of citizen observation. It means social media, Twittering, all of those activities to try to counter the other sort of event, which is a clear effort on the part of not just President Karzai, but other candidates to ensure their election, or in the case of President Karzai, ensure his favorite's election by way of fraudulent measures. So that's going on also. There's a lot of concern about what happens between the polling place and the final tally in Kabul, where the two institutions that are in charge of both delivering final numbers and investigating any complaints are believed to be quite subject to Karzai's influence.
So, you know, how are we to evaluate this election? I mean, former U.S. ambassador to Afghanistan Richard Newman suggested that the objective should not be a pristine election, but more a peaceful transfer of power that's widely accepted by Afghans to be legitimate. Doesn't that run the risk of legitimizing exactly the sort of, party boss approach that the Karzai people and some of the other favorite candidates might be taking in this election right now?
Well, precisely. And even that sort of language acceptable to Afghans, you only hear that from Americans or Westerners. You don't hear that from Afghans. Afghans talk about, you know, is this honest or isn't it honest? They don't have a sort of different measure for, well, our version of honesty. Whether there was an expectation of fraud and whether people are happy about that are two very separate issues that often get confused by Western observers. And similarly, acceptable. How would we judge whether Afghans, quote unquote, accept an outcome that they don't go to war?
Right.
A confusing use of language.
Well, then let's judge it on the basis of new voices coming into parliament, new voices actually being part of the political process to counter some of these other notions of corruption and tribalism. What is the chance that that's going to happen here?
So I think that's a really good point. We can't begin to judge the meaning of this election until we start getting both the final results and the complaints and how those complaints are adjudicated. So I really think it's too early to judge much beyond the fact that, bless them, Afghans really, as much as they could, got engaged in this process. Now, whether that, including the new voices that you're referring to, but whether that engagement translates to real influence over the outcome and the outcome beyond just this year, but in terms of new policies and things like that, remains to be judged. The other point that I think is really important to bear in mind is journalists and others who were covering the event rarely strayed very far beyond Kabul. As I said, I was on the phone to Kandahar today and heard from that area, which has been a kind of,
violent zone. Journalists have been targeted, so it makes sense that they would be quiet.
Exactly. And so the point is that in some of the more dangerous parts of the country, including the midsection and the Far East, the voter turnout is likely to have been far lower than much of what we're hearing in the media.
Very quickly before we go, 23 dead on Election Day. Is that a good sign, a bad sign, or it's just part of the process?
Don't judge Taliban violence by numbers. They're really careful. Just as you mentioned, they targeted journalists. They're very careful about who they targeted. So, in fact, violence often has a greater impact than the sheer numbers might suggest. Although, again, at least where security was tighter, a lot of people did turn out to vote anyway.
Sarah Chase is a former special advisor to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, senior associate in the Democracy and Rule of Law program and the South Asia program at the Carnegie Endowment. Sarah, thanks so much.
Pleasure.